I think they've chosen to act now for a number of reasons, but one of the most significant was the Cairncross report, which looked into the sustainability of high quality journalism. We spoke to Frances Cairncross, who wrote that report and was published 12 months ago, and made sure that she recommended that as a way of supporting journalism in a digital age.
And that quote you just heard is from Owen Meredith, who is the Managing Director at the Professional Publishers Association. The PPA have been doing a huge amount of lobbying work to axe VAT on digital publications over the last few years, and it all paid off this week when the Chancellor announced that the current 20% tax on e-books, online newspapers and digital editions is going to be abolished. So I spoke to him about what this announcement means for UK publishers, why the government chose now to action this, and what's next on the PPA's to-do list.
Amazing. Well, welcome to Media Voices, everybody. As Peter once described it, we are the sweariest media-focused podcast on the net. I'm Chris Sutcliffe.
I'm Esther Thorpe.
And I'm Peter. So we are absolutely gutted not to be going to the Digital Innovators Summit in Berlin next week. But FIP have taken the decision that all sorts of publishing organisations and publishers have taken recently and postponed. Good news is they're running the event now in parallel with the Congress in Portugal in September. So we will see you in Portugal in September.
I am packing my sunglasses.
I like Berlin, but Portugal in September sounds brilliant.
And I suppose we'll begin the news roundup with a bit of a short introduction to what, Esther, you're going to be talking about with Owen Meredith as table setting for when you get to the interview.
Like, who is the current Chancellor?
That's my big question. Rishi, what?
This is the third in the space of 10 months.
I still laugh every time I hear Priti Patel as the Home Secretary. Oh, that still just makes me laugh out loud.
Anyway, so this news story started from the fact that the UK's had its budget this week. The Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, has announced that this was a little bit out of the blue, he's announced that he's abolishing the reading tax, which is a 20% VAT charge that publishers have to pay at the moment on things like e-books, online newspapers and digital magazine editions. But the really weird thing here is that physical copies have always been exempt, and it's like a really weird quirk of European in UK law. I'll let Owen explain that later because that's kind of what he introduces with. This is just really good news for publishers.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's kind of an artifact of the fact that, you know, how do you legislate for the internet?
Yeah.
It's just taken a while to catch up with this. And as you mentioned, the PPA has had a huge role in getting this pushed through. So has News UK for all their faults they have.
Yeah. I don't want to do down anything that the PPA says, but Owen says, because he has been working really, or they've been working really hard on this. But I think the News UK really is part of this.
Like we said, it takes a while for legislation to catch up. So what is now exempt?
We actually aren't entirely sure.
Okay.
So the specified e-books, online newspapers, and like digital editions. But then there's a question, like, if you're running a news site, but you don't have a publication or a print version, and you have a paywall, is that paywall exempt? Like, are audiobooks exempt?
There are a lot of the places that are, you know, would be classified as an information site do operate a news feed as well. So to what extent are we then excluding them?
We should ask Rishi Sunak. I'm sure he's all over this. I'm sure this is top of his agenda at the moment.
And when things like, you know, things like Marie Claire's digital edition will be exempt, we know that. But then will their online stuff, if they put up any kind of paywall, will that be? There's so many like lines that, because the internet is now so complicated,
yeah,
we just don't know what this is actually going to look like.
Yeah, like Netflix puts out news content every now and then. Is that going to be exempt from it?
Like, well, but at the moment, it's looking like audiobooks aren't, which is crazy because it's
But as you mentioned, kind of, this is very good news, and this is particularly good news for places like the FT, who operate a sort of very high value subscription model.
Oh yeah, because the FT are really short on cash.
No, but you know what I mean? This is now just like, what a boon for them. They must be swooning around in a Scrooge.
I'm sure all these publishers will pass this 20% saving directly to their customers. They definitely will. Of course they will.
It's not on them to do, though. Why should they, rather?
We do talk about this a little bit later, but okay. The only thing I'd just say on this is that it's been publishers that have been shouldering the cost for that for quite a long time, because the consumer, there's only a certain price point consumers will accept, so the consumer hasn't actually been paying for that. So no, it's not like that will get passed on.
Well, I'm excited to hear what Owen's got to say about this.
All right, so before we get to that, we're going to do a, I suppose, a brief coronavirus roundup.
Our second coronavirus news roundup. We can't avoid these now.
No, I know. Well, this is one of the things, because I've seen people say, well, you know, in the same way that there are now outlets that cater to people who don't want Brexit news or Trump news, is there space for Media Voices to become a coronavirus-free site, effectively?
Yeah, but it'd just be like bird noises and forest sounds.
Yeah, you say that, but a really successful podcast is just the sound of a cat purring. So we could just transition to that.
We could probably do that, yeah.
The New York Times and a bunch of other papers, including The Atlantic and I think The Washington Post.
Well, Wired's just done it as well.
Wired, yeah. They've dropped their paywall for the foreseeable future around all their coronavirus coverage, which unambiguously a good idea. I mean, hopefully, as far as I'm concerned, this is going to serve as a template for how newspapers can serve the public good and operate a paywall in this age of misinformation.
I mean, there's places have done it before. They've done it around election content. They've done it around...
Like world events and war and things,
yeah,
haven't they?
The Brexit content, Brexit referendum, they did it in the UK, and in the States they've done it around hurricane and storm content. So yeah, it's definitely a good thing. It's a really, really nice thing to see.
And
I was reading something earlier this week, and I wish I put the link in because I've forgotten where it was, that was saying that actually historically when they've done that, subscriptions have actually gone up because people appreciate the chance, yes, to kind of get a taste of things like that.
That is exactly what I was going to say. It is, sorry, it's a business consideration as well. Like, because obviously, if you can demonstrate that you're the go-to place for information in a time of crisis like this, it's almost like a more focused Trump bump.
Yeah.
It's demonstrating that you have the vaccine to this kind of widespread disease of misinformation. It is absolutely the right thing to do. And, you know, it's interesting to see the number of places that haven't done it and sort of what their reason's been. Hi, everybody. Chris here with a bit of an update and a little look at our editing process. We recorded this episode on Saturday, the 14th of March, and if I look down at my notes, which I make throughout the episode to help with the editing process, I've heavily suggested that we cut this bit out because it seemed to be such an obvious conclusion to come to, the idea that newspapers should make information about the coronavirus readily accessible to all readers, regardless of whether they have a subscription or not. However, this morning, Sunday the 15th, the Daily Telegraph chose to run an article from the UK's Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Matt Hancock, about their coronavirus preparations and how we should be thinking about it. And they chose to run it behind a paywall. They've since taken it out from behind the paywall. They were rightly pilloried for doing that. And while we're not going to speculate on the motivations of either party for why they chose to run this behind a paywall, it kind of speaks to the idea that not everybody has quite grasped that message, that some information needs to be free, particularly when it's about something as important as, you know, a mass pandemic. So yeah, just an update to say we know what the Telegraph chose to do, but it is still our belief that pandemic information like this needs to be outside the paywalls.
I think the quality of the information that I've seen has been really good. The general, the kind of public service aspect of a lot of this reporting, I think, is really good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talk about the BBC a lot, but the BBC's news site has got a coronavirus tab now, as do a lot of places, and there's this running kind of, here's the next update, here's what's going on. But there's also this kind of public service aspect around it of, you know, how you should wash your hands, or what does social distancing actually mean? What should you be like on public transport? I think there's a lot of really good stuff out there.
Yeah, there is. It's a shame that a lot of it is contradictory to what other outlets are saying.
Yeah, it's always going to be like that. But just pick one, stick to their message. Pick a clever one, stick to it.
But I mean, with things like this, it's always going to be a bit contradictory because you've got different governments, you've got different, you know, not that scientists are disagreeing with each other, but they are giving different
advice. I really like the British view of this, which is don't f*** all.
We're either going to be like, Johnson was amazing for keeping a cool head, listening to the experts, and, you know, we're carrying on.
No one's ever going to say Johnson was amazing. No one. Or not on this podcast.
Or they're going to be criticised for, like, not doing enough when they could have done to slow this down.
That, Esther, is moral luck. It's like, yeah, exactly. It's nothing to do with kind of the competency of what they're doing now. It's all about, are we going to get lucky?
It's a big old roll of the dice. Unfortunately, the people losing is the weak and the sick.
Yeah. And I mean, I suppose we're getting deep into politics rather than media here, but the lack of a coherent message has been reflected in UK papers' front pages. and sort of how they've then reacted themselves. So there was that tweet going around basically showing what the Mail is doing internally and what the Mail has advocated doing to its readers.
You're going to have to explain that because I haven't seen that story.
So there was this, Mark DiStefano basically tweeted out a memo, an internal memo from the Daily Mail publisher saying the government's recommendations are no longer adequate to deal with the threat to our workers. Meanwhile, their front pages were saying Boris Johnson's absolutely right.
Right.
And
Okay.
So at the same time, you can say, well, you know, working in a huge newsroom isn't the same as, you know, the vast majority of people's experiences, and banning huge gatherings is not the same as banning small gatherings.
Stay safe, people.
Yeah. Well, you know what? On the back of that, we've seen so many publishers trialing work from home schemes.
Yeah, and you know, and that's got to be a good thing.
Well, it's not always been. There was a story that amused me this week that the New York Times magazine, that they've been trying to put working from home plans in place, but apparently they still really rely heavily on paper proofing, like in-person edits.
Yeah,
loads of people do that. Job bags.
Yeah, I honestly, the number of places where I'm always surprised to learn how reliant on they are on actual paper proofing.
Yeah, but the job bag just moves around and the office. And it gets ticked off, and it's a really great way of doing shit.
It's a really great way of ruining the planet, Peter.
You f***ing millennial.
But I suppose the thing is that this is just going to force it. I mean, we've always talked about this idea that, you know, things like working from home, flexible working, and digital working will come in eventually. But this is just forcing it in. I know Paul Lomax has got, he was talking about this on Twitter, that if this carries on for like 6, 8, 10 weeks, our whole working culture is going to be completely irreversibly changed. Like life will never be the same again in the workplace.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that and then I was thinking, no, it will. It'll creep back in because there are people whose jobs are basically creating work for themselves and other people.
you've got to be ready to work from home on your own. That's a huge mental shift.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've seen so many people offering support. It's actually been really, really helpful. You know, we did that freelance special a couple of weeks ago, and I've seen so many of the people who we went to for comment sharing advice on how to work from home without going completely f***ing crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Dennis office is now working from home until further notice, and we're doing Pub Fridays. We're literally doing a virtual pub meetup.
Let's say that there are some necessities and some opportunities here. So according to President Trump, Google is now creating a website that will help Americans figure out if they need a test for the virus, and if so, where they can find one. What's the problem there?
Google doesn't know anything about it.
He is the ultimate chancer, isn't he? He will just get up and say any old shit.
He's just nuts. There's I think CNN, but I think a couple of places have done Trump's claims about the coronavirus fact-checked. And it's like the CNN one is like 28, and maybe more than that by now, 28 false claims that he's made about the coronavirus. And my favourite one is him saying that, oh, well, you know what, it'll just miraculously disappear. Just like that. It'll miraculously disappear. Wish he would miraculously disappear.
Even his announcement last week about the travel ban was all over the place. Like he said yeah, at one point that there would be no trade, and at which point people were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And it turned out that wasn't actually true.
I loved the response to that. Like people coming out, his own staff coming out like in the media aftermath to be like, we're going to clarify some of his points, by which we mean walk it back completely.
It's just mental.
How are you supposed to cover that, though? I mean, I saw the NYT, they deleted a couple of tweets, which were very poorly phrased, basically amplifying his message around it rather than refuting it. But yeah, how are you supposed to...
People are used to reporting what the president says, like it's at least on one level valid.
But it's been nearly 4 years.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a really, really good piece in The Atlantic. The headline on it is Trump's presidency is over. Which, God, I wish it was, but it's just, it's really good in terms of how it analyses the fundamental problem, not just with him as a human, but with the having someone like him as president and prime minister and in charge of any sort of major nation.
Yeah.
It's a really good piece.
Do you remember like 4 years ago how much simpler life was?
Oh, some good news around coronavirus. Some enterprising people have decided to launch a quarantine-focused magazine called Isolation, which proves that there is no niche, or too ephemeral to be explored. What, if you were going to pitch an article to them, to Isolation, what would you pitch?
I'd get them to assign me to go and be in an isolation tank.
Ah,
and then report on it, because I've always wanted to try that.
Yeah. Do you not think that's a guaranteed way to go completely mad? Sensory deprivation is like...
Yeah, but think about it. If you do it, so I don't know how long that is. Is that an hour? So yeah. You're in an isolation tank for an hour. When you come out and go back and work from home, that'll seem like that'll seem amazing.
Yeah.
That'll seem like super stimulating.
And now the non-coronavirus-related news in brief. So Stylus magazine, who are one of my favourite print magazines, they are celebrating their 500th issue with a digital magazine launch. So their print edition is in such high demand, which I can testify because I can never get hold of one at my station. So the digital edition they're basically launching to help meet some of that demand. So yeah, the issue is going to be available on Apple News, Readly and a dedicated Stylist app, according to The Drum, which I can't find. So if anybody knows where to find that Stylist app, I'm desperate. this is one publication I will be downloading every week.
I bet if you find a print copy of Stylist, it'll tell you where the app is in Stylist.
Yeah, but I can't find anyway. A print copy because there's... mind you, with the coronavirus, maybe I will.
Every cloud.
I have a question about this. Print, incredibly lucrative. Why are they not increasing their print run?
It's because of the distribution model. So they're a bit like... I mean, they distribute free at all the London Tube stations and then quite a few in other major cities. And basically, the ceiling with their advertiser spend has pretty much hit where it is. Like, they could double their print run and they wouldn't get that much more advertising money, but the costs of that free print distribution are then double.
Holy shit. What does that say about free sheets, honestly?
Nice exercise in print economics there from Esther.
What then is this digital magazine going to do to the perception of the brand? Is this completely additive, or are they expecting to see an impact on the number of print titles they run?
Completely additive. They reckon they've got a demand of about 2.5 million.
Okay.
Which, honestly, given the quality of the publication and given how limited it is, they're kind of that thing where because they limit it, more people want it.
yeah, Stylus has been strength to strength, really, hasn't it?
And I am the most cynical print person out there, and this is the only thing that when they've said they're launching a digital magazine, I'm like, I will get that app.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, if they've convinced the print cynic Esther that it's going to work, is that not the ultimate test?
Yeah, I can't find the app yet. So once I find the app, I'll be a lot happier.
Boom.
Well, the UK has decided to impose a 2% digital sales tax on the revenues of online companies, including Google and Facebook.
What?
A couple of things to explore here. One of which is that I think it's been explicitly stated this risks souring trade talks with the US at a time when pretty much the UK cannot afford to risk alienating anybody else. And also, as if this isn't going to get significant pushback from the duopoly and other significant online companies.
So there was a European company that announced this about 6 months ago, and Trump absolutely lost it.
He went.
Yeah, I thought it was France.
It's always France.
And Trump was like, "Yeah, we're not doing that."
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, and maybe it's just me, I haven't seen a lot of coverage of this.
No,
I was just about to say, I think this has been snuck in at quite an opportune moment.
I mean, it has. The government's trying to play it to two audiences. Well, actually, they're trying to play it to one audience here, risking the other audience. This is to keep the Daily Mail readers happy.
Well, part of me just wondered if this was timed with the VAT thing, that they're going to drop the VAT on UK stuff, but they're basically going to make up that additional revenue by taxing Google and Facebook.
No, because that assumes that Google and Facebook are ever going to pay.
I was going to say, yeah, they're not.
No, I don't think. I think this is about, we're sticking it to these big tech companies.
Yeah, this is, we desperately need some positive press.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, but what I will say in defence of the idea, because The Guardian have done quite a good explainer of this, which we'll link to in the newsletter, is that the way Google and Facebook are taxed on their sales in the UK it's quite complicated, but it means that they can basically be like, oh, this was produced elsewhere. So even though you're reading this stuff in the UK,
we
don't have to be taxed on it. So it is trying to close this kind of really weird loophole. And in theory, it's a good idea, and it means that the tax that they'll pay in this country will be much more representative of the revenue they make from the UK.
Yeah, we're all for that.
What, the tax dictionary this week? Where did this come from?
I don't know. It's a bit scary.
So Vox Media is partnering with Google to create a local advertising network called Concert Local. This is an investment from Google that's allegedly around $1 million, and the funding is coming through their Google News Initiative program. They've got a dozen publishers on board already, according to Axios. So not going to pretend I understand everything about this, but it's quite an interesting proposition.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is you need that critical mass for anything like this to work. So if they do have that many, that they do already have those publishers, that is a fantastic start here. And HuffPost Editor-in-Chief Lydia Palgreen is leaving to join podcasting company Gimlet Media as head of content.
Quite a win for Spotify. That's a really good hire.
I think it's interesting that it shows a sort of, you know, podcasting is seen as being serious enough that serious people are joining podcasting companies.
Go podcasting!
Well, if they want to be seen as serious, then we need to heavily edit this episode then.
So this week I spoke with Owen Meredith, who is the Managing Director at the PPA. He's celebrating a big win for the association after the UK government announced that they were scrapping VAT on digital publications. So I began by asking him to explain what the situation was for publishers before the budget announcement and what on earth has been going on.
So we've had a crazy situation basically ever since digital product and page turner PDFs of magazines and paywalls and whatever else have been subject to 20% VAT, yet ever since the inception of VAT in the 1970s, print books, newspapers, magazines and journals have been zero rated, recognizing their sort of value to society and education and everything else. So just because of European rules under the VAT directive, we were not allowed to apply that zero rate to digital publications. Those rules have changed. So Brexit gives us the freedom to do what we want on VAT, but within the European Union anyway, the VAT rules have changed thanks to some lobbying work that we've been doing in Brussels. So the government's had the freedom since 2018 to zero rate digital publications. And finally, yesterday, they've done it.
Because it was October 2018, the EU said that countries could now basically make their decision on whether they had VAT, their version of VAT on stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've been lobbying in Brussels for a long time to get that rule changed. Brussels is doing a lot of work on the VAT directive at the moment anyway, but they passed a specific change to that directive to allow countries to apply whatever rate they were applying to print products to digital products as well. So in the UK case, that's a zero rate, but in other countries, it's a reduced rate.
So in the UK, because I was listening to the Chancellor announce yesterday, it's not actually coming into effect until December, is it?
1st of December. Not quite sure the purpose of that date. They need time to actually pass legislation to bring this into effect. So that will come in a finance bill that will come after the budget. And MPs will debate that and then pass that. I'm not sure there's any specific significance of December the 1st. Another VAT change they made was on the so-called tampon tax. That doesn't come
Yes, our luxury items.
Yeah, exactly. That comes into effect on January the 1st next year, which I think, is to do with us leaving the EU. So I'm quite puzzled as to why December the 1st is the date on digital publications, but I suspect HMRC might have wanted some time to think through the exact nature of how they'll work it out.
It's not like to face any more hurdles with MPs' debates, is it?
No, not. It's a key government policy. It's announced in the budget statement, so it will get through with a Conservative majority of 80. There's not going to be a challenge to the budget.
And you at the PPA you've been campaigning for this for years now, and you've recently done an Axe the Reading Tax or hashtag Axe the Reading Tax campaign. So why do you think the government has chosen now to axe this, given it's going to cost them about 220 million, I think I saw was the latest figure?
So according to the Red Book, it's a bit less than that. But the figure that we did some cross-industry research, and the figure's about 210 million a year. I think they've chosen to act now for a number of reasons, but one of the most significant was the Cairncross report, which looked into the sustainability of high-quality journalism. We spoke to Frances Cairncross, who wrote that report and was published 12 months ago, and made sure that she recommended that as a way of supporting journalism in a digital age. The government responded formally to her report in January. And then this is the first fiscal event that they've had the opportunity to make an announcement on tax. So I think it all stacks up in that order, really.
Yeah, because I think I saw something about in October, there were a group of MPs that brought the same issue forward. But that was when I've lost track of which Chancellor was in charge then.
Well, the last budget we had, Philip Hammond delivered. Sajid was Chancellor for the spending review, but that doesn't announce tax changes. So then this is now Rishi's first budget. And the good thing is I managed to sit down with Rishi a week before he was Chancellor and had a coffee and discussed this very issue with him.
That was timely.
Timely and convenient that he became Chancellor.
Yes, three chances. I've lost track of who's actually in power now.
Exactly.
I've had Mark Alker responded to this on Twitter. Actually, he's got quite a cynical view that there was a key case that was won in January by the News UK that they managed to get their digital edition classified under the same bracket as a newspaper because it only updated four times a day and was therefore closer to a print newspaper than a digital edition. Mark hypothesised that this was to stop the government kind of basically ending up with a flood of these cases. Do you think that's the case, or do you think this is kind of, there's better motives behind this?
That case is still ongoing. The HMRC have applied to appeal that ruling. So it was originally News UK lost the case, appealed to the Upper Tribunal. The Upper Tribunal then sided with them and said the zero rate could apply to their digital editions. HMRC has now appealed that and will go to the Court of Appeal with it. So I think there is an element that that case was helpful in kind of bringing it to ministers' attention. But that case will still continue because there's a retrospective element of that, whereas this change that's coming in from December 1st will only apply from December 1st.
Oh, so publishers aren't going to be able to claim back VAT on kind of decades of digital edition sales then?
Sadly not, no. Oh. If News UK managed to win at the next appeal and the decision of the Upper Tribunal is upheld, there's potential for publishers to claim back 4 years of VAT paid on digital editions over the last 4 years if they make a claim now. But that could still take another 18 months or longer, in fact. So it's worth publishers considering what steps they might want to take to make a protective claim regarding digital editions if they feel that they meet the same criteria that News have won on.
Well, I can't imagine that'd be many, but yeah, that's that'd be interesting to see play.
Well, I think for a lot of magazine publishers, it should apply to them actually, because most digital magazines are edition based and are not rolling news, whereas paywalls that protect rolling news sites wouldn't be classified under the News UK case, we don't think. But if you've got PDF or page turner versions of digital magazines or app-based, edition-based publication, then it's definitely worth looking at.
Oh yeah, of course, because I suppose magazines will just be once a week or once a month or...
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. So you've got a lot of publisher members at the PPA that are likely to now have 20% more in their pockets. What would your advice be to those publishers who have kind of... It's a bit of a windfall for a lot of them. What would you advise that they do with it?
Well, I mean, the case that we've been making to the government as to why they should take this measure and abolish VAT on digital editions is that the market price for publications is generally set by the market. It's not then VAT added on top, because VAT is included within the price point defined by the market. So there may be some opportunity to reduce prices to consumers and pass that through.
I mean, the budget seemed to imply that they should. It was sort of, publishers should probably look at passing this back to consumers.
Yeah, and I think that's focused on specific markets and where that's relevant. Obviously, one of the major issues for magazine publishers is the complication that is built in around bundling and how you attribute which part of a bundle price where you get print and digital subscription for the price of one, or combined in a total price. How you account for that within that and where you apportion value, et cetera, et cetera. That complication will be removed from December 1st. And I think that probably will feed through to money in publishers' pockets and not price changes to the consumer, because the consumer hasn't been penalised by the VAT. The publisher's been penalised by the VAT. And I think that will allow people to invest in quality journalism, invest in more journalists, hopefully. But also the argument we were making to the government in this campaign was the VAT on digital was hammering innovation in new ways of funding digital content, new paid content models. Think about things like micropayments. If somebody's paying 50p for an article and 10 pence of that has to go to the government, there's not much incentive for publishers to work on new products and new ways of funding digital content.
Yes, I suppose we could see some technology innovations there as well, couldn't we?
Yeah, hopefully so. I think it's an exciting time for the industry.
Yeah. So that's all kind of done and dusted. That's been a big campaign for you guys for years. What's next?
Well, I think it is all done and dusted bar the detail. So I think we will be continuing to work on this for some months to come as the finance bill goes through Parliament, and then as the letter of that law and how it applies and exactly which publications it applies to will be hammered out in the finance bill. So we will be working with officials in Treasury and with politicians to make sure that that applies to the widest possible range of PPA members' publications, which we've been doing to date anyway behind the scenes. And we then HMRC will write the VAT notice that interprets that again. So again, there'll be more conversations and lobbying work that we need to do to support the implementation of this. But in terms of what's next, there's a long list of on the PPA public affairs radar at the moment. So we've got all sorts of things going on with relationship with platforms, digital advertising, regulation, the CMA review of Facebook and Google, ongoing issues on sustainability and how we improve sustainability across the sector. So there's plenty to keep us going.
So the government are down and now you're taking on Facebook.
That's part of the plan, yeah. Well, someone's got to.
Yes.
I think the real point here is that this win shows what the industry can really achieve when it works together for a common goal. And that is what the PPA is here to do and can do well. So, we all know about the challenges of working with Facebook and other giant tech platforms. And there are elements of that relationship that through lobbying for regulatory change, for lobbying for legislative change, or just negotiating in terms of the way that we deal with those platforms, there are things that acting as an industry body on behalf of the industry that we serve, we can achieve great outcomes.
So I can see how you'd be able to change legislation, because I know in there's been that legislation in Europe that's come through about the snippet tax. But it's still quite difficult, even if you manage to achieve national change, to go to Google and actually get them to comply. I mean, what do you think it'll take to get them to actually agree to pay something like that, if that is the right thing?
I certainly wouldn't use the term snippet tax, but I think, what we achieved in Europe in terms of getting the publishers right as part of the copyright package was about defending a right that already exists under copyright and how content that is invested in and created by publishers is used and what remuneration comes back to them on that basis and how that's licensed. It's right that publishers who pay the journalists invest in creating brilliant content control how that content is used. And some of them may wish to do that on commercial terms. Some of them may wish to do that under a free license. But it should be ultimately up to the people who have created that content and invested in it in the first place to decide how that works.
And then the last thing we ask all our guests is, what's the last thing, and you're not allowed to say the budget, what's the last thing you read, saw or watched that really affected you?
My New Year's resolution was to try and listen to more audiobooks. I've been doing a great job of listening to more podcasts recently, and I was trying to sort of translate that into audiobooks, so I don't get a huge amount of time. And I've just finished listening to The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F*** by Mark Manson, which is actually quite an interesting read and sort of challenges you to think again about what's really important in life and how we go about living properly.
Well, that does all tie back, because audiobooks aren't actually exempt from this, are they?
That's one of the devils of the detail on this policy that we don't know. Certainly our colleagues at the Publishers Association representing book publishers were very keen that audiobooks were included, but I don't know what the outcome on that specific point will be.
So if you're working from home all day and you're on your own and you want to pretend that you've got some company, we have a growing archive of episodes that you can listen to, featuring us three mugs chatting along and some brilliant guests. Go to voices.media/discover to search by topic, or find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you might have to dig among all the true crime podcasts, but we're there somewhere.
True crime podcasts are never going to make you feel as good as we do. Never, they never are. And remember, folks, you cannot catch any virus, never mind coronavirus, from a podcast.
We want to go viral.
Staying in.
Cut that. Staying
in.
Oh, no.
Don't forget that you can also keep abreast of everything we're up to in the week, what we're writing, what we're reading, by going to voices.media. While you're there, you may as well also sign up to our weekly newsletter, which goes out every Wednesday and contains, in addition to everything we just mentioned, a link to the latest episode.
And finally, if you want to follow along with all the stories we put out each week from what we're reading and the best news from around the industry, you can follow us on Twitter at Media Voices Pod.
But until next week, when we will be back with another fantastic guest and a brief spin through all the news and views from around the media world. Thanks very much for listening. Please tell a friend and goodbye.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.